Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for joining IDOE and InSource for Office Hours. My name is Lisa Paddock. I am one of the assistant directors here at InSource, and I would like to welcome you today to our Office Hours. It's a collaboration of the Indiana Department of Education and InSource. And we are so appreciative that you have taken an hour out of your day today to join us. Please note, I have turned on closed captions. Additionally, please make sure that everyone's microphones are muted to keep down feedback noise. If you have questions, please feel free to put those in the chat box and I will be monitoring those today. So welcome. And thank you for joining us. This Office Hours will be on our YouTube channel in a few days for your benefit and so that you could share it with anyone else. So today, without further ado, I would like to introduce Jennifer Spencer. And Jennifer works at the IDOE as the Special Education Specialist. And she is going to talk to us today about a variety of different topics, such as the IAM, which is the alternate assessment for students in Indiana, the alternate diploma, which is something that is rather new this last year, and we want to make sure everyone understands about it, and also some time maybe to discuss students who do not have any mode of communication. So, thank you very much for being here today, Jennifer, and thank you all for taking time out of your busy day. And at this point, I will turn it over to Jennifer, and please be sure and put your questions in the chat or the question and answer box. And additionally, so that you know, in case you don't know, InSource is your parent training and information center for the state of Indiana, and you can find answers to many common questions and at insource.org. We have a chat feature that is very time sensitive if you have a quick question, and you can also find on our website who your special education liaison is. So at this point, I will turn it over to Jennifer. Thank you very much, and thank you all for joining us today.
All right, great. So as Lisa said, my name is Jennifer Spencer, and I'm with the Indiana Department of Education and Office of Special Education Monitoring. My primary role is that I monitor the 1% participation cap for the IAM assessment. That work does overlap a little bit with the alternate diploma, and then part of my work is that I monitor the students that have been identified as no mode of communication. And I'm going to get into a little bit about what that means exactly and who those students are. I hope today at the end of this presentation, you'll have a better understanding of IAM, the alternate diploma, and no mode of communication. These things will provide a high level overview of these particular things. If you have any specific questions related to students, you may need to talk to your special ed director. You could reach out to me. There's a lot of resources out there available, but as I said, this is kind of a high level overview. So I want to get started. So as I said, our agenda, we'll talk about Indiana's alternate measure, or IAM, and I have a box at the bottom here to kind of explain that that is also the alternate assessment. They're all the same thing. I just want to clear up any confusion there. We're going to talk about ESSA, Every Student Succeeds Act, related to the 1% participation cap, alternate assessment waiver extension request, no mode of communication, alternate diploma, and then I just have some resources I want to share that are on our website for Office of Special Education. So first, let's talk about who these students are that would be participating in IAM. This document here on the right is their participation guidance, and I'll share the link in a moment where you can access this information on our website for IDOE. As always, this is a case conference committee decision. They're using these three criteria, and they are looking at documents pertaining to the student's disability, their ability, everything that could lend information to whether or not the student would qualify for IAM. So let's just break down this information a little bit. So on the criteria, you can see on the box, the document, we have three boxes here. So I've broken them out on the left. So 1A is intellectual function. And this would be an area where we'd be looking at whether or not the student can understand abstract concepts. What is their processing and responses? Can they generalize a learned skill to another environment? So those would be some things to think about there. For 1B, it talks about adaptive behavior. And so we're looking at interpersonal skills, personal care. Sometimes we're looking at if the student can perform any sort of age-appropriate household chores, personal care. If they're taking prescriptions and they're maybe an older student, do they know what time they need to take their prescriptions? Do they have appropriate interpersonal relationships with other students? So those are some things to think about. And then for the participation criteria too, that talks about substantial support. Does this student require extensive support, individualized methods for instruction, repeated opportunities to repeat learned skills that is not of a temporary nature? And then for criterion three, we have adapted materials. And so are they using substantially adapted materials, assistive technology, audio or visual items, AAC? And so those are the things we would think about in relation to each of those criterion to determine if a student is appropriate for IAM. The first choice is always that they have as much exposure in the general classroom with the general curriculum with accommodations if needed. But if that's not possible, then we would be looking at IAM. And so when we're looking at this criteria, we want to see this on the IEP. So if we look at present levels, something with regard to this criteria is included there. Their intellectual functioning and their adaptive behavior, all those things should be included in their present levels of the IEP. Goals should really be related to these areas where appropriate. They should be aligned to the content connectors. Under the section for accessible materials and assistive technology, again, there should be something included there where the student is requiring accessible materials and assistive technology, if appropriate. These things may not apply to all students, but if they are using these things, we should be able to easily tell what it is they're using and why. And then for eligibility for IAM, there is a place on the IEP to include why the student is appropriate for IAM and why they're not appropriate for the general assessment. So definitely include some information there, and you can just always go back to the criterion to make that eligibility statement for IAM for testing. Other things to think about for eligibility for IAM, it is a not a, excuse me. It is not an automatic placement when we identify somebody of a particular disability. We still want to look at this criterion in every instance. And other considerations where we've not solely based a decision for IAM are listed here on the bottom of the document. I will give you that link. But some of these things are administrator decision, low reading achievement level, anticipated disruptive behavior, or that it, could upset the student, poor attendance, things like that. That might be a part of the student's experience in school and their circumstance. And that can certainly impact their performance, their ability, things like that. But we really always want to go back to that criteria and be able to justify that very detailed way. So always look back at the criteria. And then, as I said, it's a case conference committee decision. And so this is the next slide I have. This link here on the right, that is where you can go to get that participation criteria guidance that I just showed you. What you're going to see is right here on the left, and it's going to say alternate assessment ESSA 1% cap. And down here in the middle of my screen, you can see participation guidance and flow chart. So we have it English and Spanish. You just saw the participation guidance. The flow chart is a tool the case conference committee members can use in decision making related to deciding if someone is appropriate for IAM. And then we have this FAQ, and that kind of helps again with decision making. These next two links down here, the waiver extension 2023-2024. The first link here is our waiver extension request. We have sent that out to the Office of Special Education Programs, that is the Federal Department of Education. We've sent it to them in December, and we're waiting to hear back. They did ask for some feedback on a couple items, and we provided that. So now we're waiting for another response. And
Jennifer,
then this last...
if I could stop you for a second and ask a question.
Mm-hmm.
Would you explain what the waiver is for the
1%? Yeah, I was getting to that. The waiver is, as I said here, this alternate assessment ESSA 1% cap. And you can read this in this blue box right here. Whoops, sorry. Didn't mean to do that. But ESSA, Every Student Succeeds Act, indicates that states should only be including 1% of students in the IAM or their alternate assessment. And that's a statewide 1% cap. And so that is the cap that has been, that's an indicator that we're using that we have to abide by. And so then, as I was saying here on the left, the bottom, we have these, it says 1% cap on alternate assessment participation survey. So sometimes that's called the assurances. And so anytime an LEA is over 1% in participation, they have to complete an assurances survey. And that just is a reminder of the participation criteria that I just reviewed. And then there's often other questions on how they're handling procedures and including parents in the decision, things like that. But it's how we can remind the field of the participation criteria and just assuring that they're abiding by that criteria. And so this is where we post the assurances down here. And so that is that. Does that answer your question on the cap?
Yes, I wanted to make sure that everyone understood, the cap and what the waiver was that we were applying for.
Yes,
in the
it is a statewide cap. Sometimes I've heard feedback on that, it is a state cap. However, then we monitor the participation of the LEAs because, as you know, that comprises of the state's cap. And then that is our procedure, that anyone that is over 1% as an LEA, we really don't go drill down to particular buildings or particular schools. It's just the LEA as a whole. That's the number that we use. Here's what it looks like for state level. So on the left, this is the cover page of the 1% waiver extension request that I had sent to OSEP this year. And this is our progress for our participation since the 2016-2017 school year. As you can see, we've made progress. And so we're really hovering right at 1%. And we would like to maintain that or reduce that a bit. We did see an increase in science, and I think a lot of that is related to the alternate diploma, which we'll talk about in a moment. So a little bit more on the participation waiver. So I'll start here on the top left. I've got I've received questions on how to calculate that participation rate. So the yellow box here is your numerator, and that is the total number of students that are participating in IEM. That again, we use the LEA number, but if you wanted to look at your particular school, your particular building, you could look at your number of students that are participating in all subject areas or by subject, whichever you wanted to do, for IEM only. So the top would be only IEM students. And again, you could do it by subject area or total testers. And then the denominator is the blue box right underneath the yellow box. And that's the number of students participating in all testing during that same school year. And then you would divide and then multiply by 100, and that would be your participation rate. In the middle here, it's just the same box that we had saw on the last slide. This is the actual information from the Every Student Succeeds Act that pertains to this 1% cap, if you would like to read that. And then on the right here, this is the participation criteria again. And so what we're doing, what we're looking at, our focus this year, we anticipate exceeding the 1% cap for the 23-24 school year. Right now, we're in the middle of a testing window, and we're anticipating exceeding that 1% cap. And so what we will do at the end of this testing window, once we receive the data, we will identify any LEAs that are over 1%. We will verify that they have followed the participation guidance. And a lot of that is just sending out the assurances. We can do IEP desk audits. We can reach out if we need to, whatever it is that we feel like would be helpful to monitor that 1% cap. And where appropriate, we will provide technical assistance for support. And then we always look at disproportionality. We don't really have a lot of disproportionality in IEM. Typically, it's in the area of a Black male. But in previous years, we've had maybe 19 districts that were showing any disproportionality in IEM. Not always in that particular subgroup, possibly in others. In this last assessment window that we had for, let's see, 22-23, right? Yeah, we had maybe 12 or 13 districts that reflected any disproportionality in IEM. So, and relative to the number of LEAs we have across the state, that's not very many. So that's great, actually. Next slide. So another subgroup when it comes to IEM is the students that have been identified as no mode of communication. These are students that have no mode of communication. Maybe they're in a trial phase for devices. Typically, they're very young. IEM starts out at third grade. For whatever reason, they do not have a dedicated method or a dedicated mode for communication. And so there may be some challenges when it comes to testing. And so this slide shows what we're advising LEAs to do before testing, you know, ensuring that all student testing devices and peripherals are in working order, fully charged. Confirm that any necessary accommodations have been assigned and tied. Tied is where the testing portal would receive those accommodations. And I don't really want to get into that, but at any rate, so for a student to be identified as no mode of communication, there are five questions. So the first two questions are your practice questions for IEM. And so when the student is sitting with the educator during testing, if the student cannot produce a response, then you could choose, the educator, the testing coordinator would choose no response. And they would do that each time. After those two questions, then we move into the actual testing portal, the test itself. And then there are three questions there. Once you get to that third test question, which is five total questions, a box will pop up to indicate that by doing so, you have identified the student as no mode of communication. Is that correct? Yes or no? Well, as I said, we want this to be students that do not have any observable mode of communication because we do take that data, we review that information. We want to make sure that those students have a communication goal. And that, we'll read the IEP and make sure that we're reviewing devices or somehow this is addressed. And really, that's not been a concern. We have reviewed those students. Everyone has a communication goal. That is going really well. I just want to caution that sometimes there could be instances where maybe the student is having a bad day. And it's not that they don't have an observable mode of communication. They're just not responding. And that's a little bit of a different story. And so then this is why it says 20-minute pause rule. So then we would suggest maybe taking a pause and then coming back. But for students that have no mode of communication, again, it should be clearly represented in the IEP. This should be included in present levels, goals. We should see a communication goal. If they are using devices, we should be including that in the accessible materials, assistive technology. And then I have the eligibility here. You could even include something in the IEM eligibility rationale box on the IEP. But really, we just want it to be clear that this student is no mode of communication in the IEP and on IEM, and that those two align.
Jennifer, I had a question in the chat and I had a question also.
Okay.
Do you have a general, this is for me, do you have a general idea how many students do not have a mode of communication in the state? That's the first one.
I'm not sure the exact number at this time. I want to say maybe between 400 and 500, maybe in the whole state. That's not very much.
And as you stated, it should be reflected all the way through the IEP that language of some type, communication is being worked on, communication goal, and then also stating what is happening to try to build communication skills in some way, because it is important, even when a student gets past the young age, which is when we often see it focused, even later, to continue to try to work on those goals.
I've seen some really great IEPs where, like, in under present levels, they have included that the student, has tried device number one or mode number one, and that didn't really work well with the student because this is very individualized. And they've even explained why this wasn't the best choice for the student. For whatever reason, they've explained all that. I could read the IEP and I could clearly see why that didn't work, but then they would go on to say that we're trying this and this and different things. And so that was just great because, I don't know that student. So reading that information, I could really understand quickly where the student is at in their sort of journey for that communication.
Great. So that is important to continue to try to work toward. Second question comes from the audience. What percentage rate does Indiana anticipate we will be at in terms of ESSA?
For the 1% cap, I would say, and I can go back on that slide right there. I would say, it's going to be very close. I'm not seeing a big increase. You can see where we're really hovering around the same numbers for the last few years. I think that the alternate diploma has become more of a hot topic this school year, so we could see a bump from that, but I could only guess, to be honest. So, we'll know soon.
Thank you.
All right. And then let's talk about the alternate diploma. And so that is a state-defined document. It's a diploma available to eligible students with the most significant cognitive disabilities. And so those will be the students that we just discussed, excuse me, for IAM. It's the same criteria. It's standards-based, and it's aligned with the state's requirements for the regular high school diploma. So we're using content connectors, but those are very much aligned with the general academic standards. And then below here is just a blurb from ESSA talking a little bit about the alternate diploma. And if you go to this link right here, it's under, first you'll see DOE, then you'll see students, then you'll see graduation pathways, and then diploma requirements. I left that link there because I wanted you to see the path of it. Instead of just clicking on the link and getting the document, it is under our graduation pathways, under diploma requirements. And so I just wanted that to be clear. And it's at all the way at the bottom of the screen, actually. So when you go to that page, scroll all the way down, and you'll see this where it says alternate diploma. Here's a little bit of a criteria here, describes it. The first link is a frequently asked question. So there's a lot of questions in there. And we're going to update that soon, actually. But and then the second here is the course of study. And so I pulled out a couple questions here from the frequently asked questions. This one comes up a lot. If students are allowed to return after earning an alternate diploma, what is the expectation for the curriculum? Well, first I want to say students can go back to high school after they've earned the alternate diploma because they are allowed to, they're permitted the right to earn a general high school diploma. So they can return back to school. And so then the question says, what is the expectation for the curriculum? Students should continue to provide grade level standards-based instruction for students in a manner consistent with the student's IEP, even if the student has already met the requirements for an alternate diploma. Pursuing the alternate diploma does not prevent any student with a significant cognitive disability from working towards meeting the requirements for an Indiana diploma. And then the other question here that I've included is, will the alternate diploma course of study be the same as their certificate of completion course of study? And the answer is no. The alternate diploma course of study requirements are set forth in, and then here's the statute, and can be found here, and that's a link. That's a picture. So you'd have to go to this link here on the left to access the rest of this frequently asked questions. As I said, it's right here. But the certificate of completion is now locally managed and monitored. IDOE is not managing that or monitoring that. And so really it's a local decision on who would be awarded the certificate of completion, but it doesn't have to be related to disability any longer. It can be, that really is up to the district. And then lastly, I just wanted to share this. So this is on the Office of Special Education webpage. Again, I've shared this link. You can see the path, special education, and then you'll click on parent and community resources. And this is what you'll find here. There's a lot of great tools and resources here related to this topic, or really anything related to the Office of Special Education, students with disabilities. InSource is, as you can see, the second link here. I think InSource is a great resource for families, and they're very, very well informed, and they've always been great to work with. So for myself and for parents, it's just a great tool. I'm glad we have it. Lisa's great. So, what questions do we have?
And Jennifer, I did put the link to the FAQ about the alternate diploma in the chat. I know it's going to be updated.
Yes.
Additionally, thank you for continuing to provide information about the certificate of completion, because we are getting calls about that, and helping families and schools understand that that is now overseen by the local school corporation. So at this time, does anyone have any questions for Jennifer? Because this is an important topic. We want families, and of course, community stakeholders to understand about IM and about the alternate diploma, and students that have no mode of communication. And we have been getting a lot of calls about the alternate diploma, and we here at InSource have been working with our staff to try to make sure that they have a good knowledge of that based on the guidance we've been given from IDOE. So, does anyone have anything they would like to put in the chat so we can ask Jennifer? So one thing that I would say that we often have a discussion about is when a school and family should have that discussion about an alternate diploma. Jennifer, would you like to speak to that? Because we kind of just say it's a case conference committee decision, but you typically wouldn't make that decision early on. It would be further in the student's educational career, but maybe you could speak to that.
Yeah, that's a tricky question. I mean, it really, you can't give an answer of a particular grade level. Everybody is so different. Some students, you may have that conversation early on. My advice would be, yes, it is a case conference committee decision. I think that it could be part of the conversation, but I would like, our focus is always to keep students as much as we can in the general curriculum and exposed to that as much as possible. And then when you talk about least restrictive environment and things along that line, I think this could be a topic of conversation, but I wouldn't want to label any student in this sort of pocket, if you will, as a permanent label early on. It could be something we discuss, but it should always be open for changes. We should always be looking at new information and anything that we have that's new about the student, and always consider if we can put the student in a general education environment or on the general assessment, maybe with accommodations, and really just always be talking about that too. So that's what I would say there.
Good, thank you. Well, and that is part of what we talk about. We talk about that early time, the difference of modifications and accommodations. And then we talk about, excuse me, in high school, you can't modify like perhaps earlier on, and what that actually means and how a parent should understand if something's modified or not. But eventually, there will be a time where that's a discussion, but that there's also requirements for that alternate diploma. It looks different, as you were saying, but they are still built on the standards when you look at the contact connectors. I do not have any questions in the chat yet. Jennifer, are there any other links that you wanted to drop in?
I don't have any other links. No,
Okay.
that would give someone great information on the alternate diploma, and then the 1% cap webpage, which talks about the waiver, participation guidance. Then we have a link for the parent resources on the OSE, Office of Special Education webpage. I could always include my email address if you have any other questions. I know for myself, once I kind of log out of meetings, you kind of start thinking in your mind what you've heard and what you've read, and you start to think of other questions that you hadn't thought of before. So, definitely feel free to reach out. I love to help as much as I can. So yeah, just reach out.
Okay, well, I also put the graduation requirements document from IDOE in the chat just now.
All right.
All right. Well, everyone, one more chance to ask any questions of Jennifer before we end office hours. And next month, and office hours are the fourth Tuesday of each month during the school year. We will have a speaker from the Department of Ed that will be speaking about the McKinney-Vento Act, I believe. Sometimes those things change. We don't can't foresee that, but that is the plan at this moment. And again, we would love to thank you for being part today of office hours. Please visit our website at nsource.org. We are the Parent Training Center for Indiana, and we are here to help you in any way that we can. And help families understand that special education process. And of course, the Department of Education's website. And at this point, if we do not have any other questions, I believe that does conclude our office hours. Thank you, Jennifer, very much for speaking today. And thank you, everyone, for coming today. And I hope that you have an excellent afternoon. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you.